very much for the opportunity.
Okay. So as we're approaching Shavuos, I want to perhaps start, if I can, just to share a few questions. And sometimes when sitting around a shir, you're like, I don't want to ask any question, I want to sit there. But I won't test you too much because that's what we do during the daytime job. But, okay, I want to start by just throwing out some questions, not necessarily looking directly for answers, but for questions that perhaps we need to ask. So first of all, when we come to Shavuos, Matan Torah, okay, Shavuos, which we come, as we're told, by Rav Dessler, and lots of different explanations are given, that when we come round in the Jewish year, it's like a train track. And therefore you're coming to the different Chag, and it's like a different train station, that you're coming round on a circular way, back to that same train station that you were the year before. Hopefully we look a little bit different, and hopefully we're seeing the world a little bit differently. We're coming back to that particular same point that we were last year and the year before. And with that particular idea, therefore, says Rav Dessler, that each one of the train stations has within it a spiritual potential. And therefore, that's why, for example, the Gemara explains, when will the final Geula be? So according to one opinion, it says in the Gemara, it'll be in Nisan. Why? Because that was the time of Geula. So therefore, if that was the time of Geula, that's the train station for Geula. Therefore, as a result, the final Geula, the final redemption in the future, will be in Nisan. Okay, very nice. So now we come to Shavuos. What is exactly the train station? What are we supposed to be tapping into? Okay, we're supposed to be eating, supposed to be doing different things, but what specifically is the train station? What specifically is the potential of Kabbalah Sotura 100%? Is there something perhaps deeper that we can also connect with? So that's question one. Second question, if we perhaps come to Megillas Rus on Shavuos, well, what has Megillas Rus at the end of the day got to do with Shavuos? And if you want to come along and tell me, okay, because David HaMelech descended from Rus, and therefore, according to our tradition, it was his yahrzeit plus his birth on Shavuos, so that's one reason. Or you want to tell me that, okay, the whole Megillas Rus is around the harvest season, and therefore, as a result, since that's the same tekufa, the same period of time of the harvest time, so we read, okay, Megillas Rus. But what's going on? Then you want to come and tell me that because she converted to Klal Yisrael, we converted to Klal Yisrael by receiving the Torah. I don't know. If that fits with you, that's fine. We can go home now. It's okay. But just in case it doesn't fit with you, because it didn't fit with me, we want to try, perhaps in tonight's shir, to try and tap into, is there a deeper yesod? Is there a deeper principle behind why we read Megillas Rus? Second question. Third question is names. Now, I don't know about you, but when it comes to names in families, okay, right, this one calls that one, I know, I put my hand up, I called Rav Horowitz, I can name this child, that name, okay, it's a fascinating concept. I was even by Rav Horowitz recently, and I said about my eldest son, Chaim. He goes, who? I said, Chaim, and it's been a few years, because he was, what's it called, he was very involved when he was born, and then finally I said, Chaim Yisrael, he goes, that's the one. Now, how does he remember that? But he does remember that because names have a power, and therefore it's not just Chaim, it's Chaim Yisro, because that's his actual name. And therefore, as a result, if we think about names, names contain within it our spiritual potential. So if that's correct, as we know, that one of the famous names throughout, okay, Navi, is the story of Yonah. Okay, and Yonah, as we know, means a dove. Dove is the loyal bird, hence Noach sent it out the Teva. And therefore, as a result, that's the whole story with Yonah as he ran away. He ran away because he wanted to be loyal to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, as a result, hence Yonah encapsulated his destiny. But then if we get to the story of Rus, something's very strange. Because I don't know how, if they were in school, how the register would have gone. They would have gone from Shimon, Levi Yehuda, and then Machloin and Kilion. Now, if we think about that, those particular names don't go down very well, because Machloin, there are different pshatim on this, but one pshat is that Machloin is like Machla, sickness, and Kilyon is destruction. Now, I don't know about you, but that wouldn't look very good on a register, okay? And therefore, as a result, why would Eli Melech and Naomi call their sons after sickness and destruction? I don't know about you, but that's very strange. For me, anyway. Now, and also, this is not a riddle, by the way, but this was a question that was posed to me by one of my rabbonim all those years ago in Yerushalayim. And he says as follows, and it's not a riddle, I promise. But he said as follows, he said, if someone was going, unfortunately, into a prison cell, and they're going to be there for a very long time, and they're allowed one item to take with them, what would it be? So if you're in a Sem or you're in a Beis Yaakov, then it's going to be a Tehillim. It's going to be all these different things because they all are looking to be, want to be from in the next one. But if we think about it, what would that item be? I'm not going to answer that. We'll come back later in the Shir Mitzvah Shem. So let's just summarize the moment. Number one, what is this train station all about? Number two, why do we read Megillas Rus? At the train station comes Shavuos. What does Megillas Rus actually have to do properly with Shavuos itself? And does it give us a deeper idea? Number three, why did he call them Elimelech and Nomi, Machlon and Kilion, when these two names represent sickness and destruction? And finally, okay, if one was going in to the prison cell, which hopefully none of us are, okay, but if one would, Chas v'Shalom, be going into such a cell, and they don't know how long they're going to be there, but they'll have one item, what would that be? Okay, so now, okay, we've got those questions, we're going to shelf those for a moment, and now we're going to have to go on a journey. When driving a car and going on a journey, which is always an experience down King's Road, as I just noticed, nevertheless, okay, we're going to go forward, we're going to look forward, which they're very good at, but they're not good at looking in the mirror and seeing behind them. So we now need to backtrack for a moment. We're going to go on a journey where we're going to backtrack and look in our mirror of Jewish history to be able to try and understand a deep shot, a deeper idea of what is going on in Megillas Rus. So, if I would ask you, don't worry, I'm not going to really ask you, because I know, like, you know, I remember torture. I even actually, unfortunately, made someone cry in my lesson. I'm like, I've got a question. Right, okay, all right, I've learned. Don't do that. So therefore, as a result, the question is, if one would ask you, or if one would come home from school and would ask you, where does Abraham first appear in the Torah? Now, when this was asked to me, straight away, Parshas Lech Lecha. It's obvious. It's Parshas Lech Lecha. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Abraham, leave your land. Okay, that's one idea. One of my children turned around and goes, no, that's not it. And he said to me, he says, it was the whole story with smashing the idols and the Avodah Zarah. So I said, that's not specifically in the Torah. That's a Midrash. And that needs a whole discussion at a different time. But nevertheless, that was a Midrash. So I asked him where specifically. So most people would say, Parshas Lech Lecha. What's going on? Parshas Lech Lecha. But in actual fact, that's wrong. It's not Parshas Lech Lecha. I'm scared to ask if there's any ideas out there. But anyway, we'll say that that's not true. The actual fact was, and I'll just read you some psukim in a second. The actual pshat is the first time that Avram actually comes on scene is at the end of Parshas Noach. Right at the end, I always learnt this the hard way, as my wife points out to me. Okay, always read the small print. Because the small print is where they're going to get you. And therefore, there's small print in the Torah where people just literally wave their eye over, because that's not exciting, the end of Parshas Noach. We want the Lech Lecha, yeah? But in actual fact, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated and dictated that, therefore, right at the end of Parshas Noach, the first introduction to Avram Avinu is going to be this particular psukim that I'm going to share with you, there has to be a deeper idea of what's going on. And you may be thinking, what in the right mind has he got the wrong title for the share? Has this got to do with Megillas Rus? We've got to stay tuned. But nevertheless, we see that these psukim give us a hint and an idea of who really Avraham Avinu was. And the psukim tell us, I'll just talk, rather than read them literally, I'll tell you the scene. It talks about how Terach, he had three sons, Avram, Nachor, and Horam. And these particular three sons, as we know the story, that Horam, okay, he was called, he died very young, as we know the whole story that took place with him. And he had three children so far. He had, number one, Lot, and he had two daughters, Sarah, who's read there, Iscah, Sarah, and he also had, okay, where are we up to? And he also had Milcah, okay? So he had two daughters and one son, Lot. As a result, once the Torah tells us, once it says that that Horam passed away, suddenly the situation is as follows. Avram and Nachor, Vayikach, they took, okay, two wives, one each. Who were the wives they took? Avram took Sarah and Nachor took Milcah. I don't understand. What's going on over here? Why are they marrying, okay, their nieces? What's going on over here? But nevertheless, they did. And then it says over there in the Psukim that I want you to know, because we know this later on in other parshiyos, I want you to know, in Lovod, I want you to know that Sarah's not going to be able to have children. Sarah's not going to be able to have children. Why in the right mind do we need to put that there in these Psukim? Where's the sensitivity? What's going on? But nevertheless, we see as follows. Tragedy took place. One of their brothers passed away young. He could have had many more children. He passed away young. He leaves three children. Abraham and Nahor, the two brothers of Haran, step up gear and say, we've got it sorted. We're going to now marry the two daughters, their nieces. And as a result, what was the intention? The intention was to perpetuate the name of Haran. But Haran's got children. What's going on over here? But he died young. He could have had many more children. And therefore, as a result, they see that therefore it's upon them to step up and to marry their nieces in order to perpetuate the name of their deceased brother. That was the reason why they acted in such a way. So, we now have something on our hands. As many of you may be familiar with, in Parshas Ki Tzitzi in Sefer Devarim, there's a mitzvah called Yibum. And unfortunately, if it goes bad, there's a mitzvah called Chalitza. And therefore, as a result, let's understand the situation as follows. It says over there in Sefer Devarim, when it talks about the mitzvah of Yibum, we know the mitzvah of Yibum is clearly laid out that if two brothers are living in proximity, they're both married. And as the Torah tells us very clearly over there, that at that stage, if one of them, unfortunately, passes away, and he didn't, him and his wife, have children yet, then the obligation is on the brother to marry the widow of his late brother. That is the mitzvah of Yibum, in order to perpetuate the name of the deceased brother. And if you don't, then there's a procedure called chalitza of the removing of the shoe, etc. You may ask ourselves, that's really foreign. Yibum's really, really foreign to us, Baruch Hashem. But nevertheless, I never forget, I feel very old, going approximately back about 15 years ago, I was in the King David where I used to teach, and an Israeli soldier with his wife came to speak. And this is a guy walks in like this, yeah, as they tried to do, yeah. He didn't have his Uzi, so it didn't look the right part. But he walks in speaking to these students, and this guy is built like this, in the middle of his speech, breaks down and crying like a baby. And the reason why is because he was discussing and describing how he had to perform chalitza, okay, to his deceased brother's wife. Because unfortunately, we don't think about it, Baruch Hashem, but it's quite, I wouldn't say common, but it's happening, okay, at different points in Eretz Yisrael. And he was describing how his brother got married, and it was even in Shana Roshona, which normally they patur, if you stay in the army, they patur, you go back, Shana Roshona. And he wanted to, he was an officer, high ranking, and he asked his wife permission to go back and then to come back. She said yes, and unfortunately he lost his life in action. And as a result, the mitzvah of Yibum would be upon him. We do not do Yibum today, and therefore as a result, he had to do Chalitza, and he's crying and describing the pain that he had to go through, okay, of the agony, because he wants to perpetuate the name, but we nowadays don't do that. So we see very clearly the concept of Yibum is perpetuating the name of the deceased, and that is because there was potential. That potential never came to reality, and therefore, as a result, you want to build that name to bring that potential that didn't come through the late brother, so now you want to bring that potential into this world. And that's chesed. That's true chesed of the finest amount. Because as we know, chesed is to give to the other person. That is giving to the other person because it's building the other person up. So that's Yibum and that's chalitza. But I would just say, as we all know ourselves, sitting around the table in our own lives, context is the key. As I find out daily in my life, dealing with certain children in a school. Context, if you put something in context, you can try and understand the situation around you. If you take something out of context, you won't fully understand the picture. Never forget, I believe the Mice of the story I heard once by Rabbi Zerul Tauber. He told over in London many years ago, and he was quoting a story about himself of where he was on a speaking tour, and he was with Reb Shimshon Pinkers back then in the day, And he would go around on the speaking tour, and he was in, I believe, in New York. And he was in a hotel, if I remember correctly the story. And he's spoken throughout the day, and he finally gets to his hotel room. Okay, and he's sitting there on his bed. There's a chair there. He opens up to do the Daf Yomi. And he was saying over this story of how as he was opening up to do the Daf Yomi within a few minutes, which happens normally to me naturally, he was falling asleep, head on the Daf, okay, and he's completely out. And about 2, 3, 4 in the morning, he wakes up and he's like startled, like, what's going on over here, right? And he said, when he was describing it, he said he was so depressed. He said, what is going on over here? My ancestors, okay, learned 10 Daf, 20 Daf a day. And I come to learn the Daf and I fall asleep on the Daf. What's going on? And then he said something quite profound. He said many things profound. One of the points he said, I looked around the room. And there was this TV screen the size of the entire room. And there was a remote control right by it. I had an opportunity to watch everything that was possible. But I put the remote in the drawer and I left it alone. It's not for me. He said, my ancestors didn't have that test. I have that test. I may have not been able to learn the Daf that night, but I have a different test to what they have. And therefore, as a result, when you put context to something, you can understand something much greater. So now if we go back a moment to the story, when was Abraham first on scene? He was first on scene when he did a form of Yibum for his late brother. Okay, but where's the context? What's going on? Why was that so special? Because he did that, and he did it with Sarah, who was barren, and therefore there was no chance of her ever perpetuating the name because she can't have a child. If that's the case, well, what was there context around it? Was something else going on that really made the action that Avram did in his generation even more special? And the answer is yes. So we now need to look in our mirror one more time. And you're going to hear that phrase, and I apologize if I repeat it a few times. But we now need to look in our mirror and go back a little bit more. And what was the event that we know in the Torah just before Avram Avinu came on, between Noach and Avram? It was Migdal Bavel. It was the story of Bavel. And in Migdal Bavel, we know very clearly that they came together with one language, Rashi says, Lashon HaKodesh, and they spoke one language. And what was their goal? They said to themselves, 1 minute, in just a generation, okay, our parents, and if the grandparents, our parents probably, who are alive now, well, they lost that. They lost everyone beforehand. There was the great Mabul, it was the great flood. We don't want to be lost. We want our name to be remembered. So if we want our name to be remembered, then we're going to build a tower. We're going to build this monument so high that everyone will come from afar and go, wow, it's like the Twin Towers, wow. And therefore, as a result, everyone would admire it, say, who built that? We'll put all our names down the side of the building of the Migdal, and therefore, as a result, it'll be lovely. And the Pasuk says very clearly, what did they want to do? It says as follows, let us make ourselves a name for ourselves. I'm not interested in the name for someone else. I'm interested in my name. And therefore, as a result, Migdal Bavel encapsulates the concept of selfishness on the highest order, and therefore, as a result, they were only interested in themselves, and that's why they built the Migdal, that's why they built the tower. And therefore, as a result, comes along Avram Avinu afterwards, and he was countering that generation. You, the tower builders, you want your name to be remembered? I'm going to show you that I'm the opposite. I'm building someone else's name. And therefore, as a result, that was the clash. And that's what made the actions of Avram Avinu so special, because he was countering the context of his generation, which was all about themselves. And he was saying, it's not about ourselves. It's about the other person. It's about my brother. And you see something very, very fascinating, that Avram Avinu, not only was he building about someone else, but he was also building about a Kadosh Baruch. Because as the Pesukim tell us very clearly, shortly after Lech Lecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns around to Avram Avinu and he says, Avram Avinu, okay, I'm going to make your name great. Well, 1 minute. To someone, that's really schwitz. Make your name great? Wow, they'll be honored. They'll stand up when I walk in the room. It'll be amazing, right? I'm honored. Avram turns around in the few psukim later and he builds the Mizbeach. And when he builds the Mizbeach, he's calling out in the name of Hashem. I'm not interested in my name. I'm interested in your name, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Avram was a person who built names. The names of others, in this case his brother, and the name of Hashem. And therefore, as a result, we see very, very clearly that that's who Avram was. Person who built others and the name of Hashem. And as we know very clearly, when a philanthropist, I can say that word just about, what's it called, comes along to donate money, there's different types of philanthropists. There'll be someone that will come along and say, I'm just reading that book. It's not an ad, by the way, but that 90 seconds is amazing. But that's just a small anecdote. Okay, and he talks in there of how people have donated beyond to Hatzalah. And he says over there, there were so many different people that have donated. And there's different types of donors. There are donors that will give because they're giving because of the cause. And there are donors that will give because I want my name on the wall that everyone should see. What are you giving for? Are you giving for the cause or are you giving for your name? That was the battle Avram brought to the world. So now, let's have a look at a formula. No, it's not a maths lesson, relax. But the formula is, let's get this clear. A father has two sons plus a son. Tragedy. And at that point, tragedy strikes. The name of a brother is threatened. And a family member jumps in. Let's do that one more time. Father. Two sons plus a son. Tragedy strikes. Name is threatened. Family member jumps in. So let's put that to Avram. Avram and Nahor plus Haran. Tragedy strikes. Haran dies. Name's threatened. Perpetuation. Family member jump in. Nahor and Avram. To perpetuate the name. If I lost you.
Yeah.
Okay, one more time. One more time.
I thought
what?
I thought the family member that comes in is Sarah.
So the family member, the action is really Avraham to do the yibam, to do the act, okay, to marry her, to perpetuate. So you're right, it was joined. You're right, let's put it the two of them together. Yeah? What's it called? 100%. Fine, okay. Got the formula?
Yeah.
I feel like I need a board. Okay, fine. Okay, so therefore, father, two sons, plus one, tragedy, name gets threatened, family members jump in. So that was Avram. Let's rewind and go from Avram 10 generations backwards. That was Noah. Noah had three sons, two plus one. I'm good at maths. Then tragedy strikes where Chom did the act to Noah. Now, don't want to confuse you, it's late hour. The father's name in this case gets threatened because he was supposed to have more children, one more child definitely, okay? And Chom did something to him where he didn't allow him to have more children after the act. Tragedy strikes. The name of the brother is threatened. In this case, really, it's the father. But you could also say it's the brother because the brother was going to be born, but didn't get born because he did the act to his father. The brothers jump in. Okay, right. Shem and Yofes take the cloak, Vayikach, which is the same Loshon when Avram took Sarah, and they walk backwards to cover up the father. Okay, that's sweet. That's really nice, okay? But now let's go 10 generations before. Adam and Chava, Cain and Hevel, plus one. Where's the plus one? We never say the third. It's always Cain and Hevel. There was plus one. But I'm going to leave that plus one on the shelf for a moment. Adam and Chava had two children, Cain and Hevel. Cain, as we know the story, kills Hevel. And at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a conversation, one of the most famous conversations in the Torah, I feel it is, with Cain. Cain, you have seriously messed up. You've killed your brother. That was half of civilization. You have killed Hevel. We're now going to have a conversation. And it says as follows. Ein hevel achicha. Where is your brother? Okay. Hevel. And at that point, Cain had a choice. Admit you messed up. Fix up the mess up. And as a result, okay, perpetuate the name of the deceased brother. You've got it. Tragedy strikes. You did the tragedy. The name's threatened because you killed your brother. So what are you going to do? Step up gear now and build his name of the brother you killed. But he says, V'yom eloi yodati, v'shoim me'ochi anoichi. Am I my brother's keeper? Leave me alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, back off. I'm not interested. I'm for myself, and I'm not building his name. And that's why, if you have a little look in the Pesukim after that Maisa, after the story, you'll see very clearly that the Pasuk tells us very fascinating. V'yeda Adam oid, and Adam knew his wife furthermore, et ishtoi, v'tele ben, and they had a son. V'tikra et shemoi sheis, and they called him Sheis. Place. Kishis li elokim zera acher. This is, watch this. Tachas hevel ki horgo kain. In place of hevel. So you now see that beginning, Adam and Chava, what do we see? I'm sorry about the mass. Father, okay, and his wife had two children plus one to come. Tragedy strikes, king kills hevel. The name is going to be threatened, and at that point, the parents step in. Parents or child. 10 generations later, Noah messes up, he gets drunk, Ham does what he does, father plus 3 sons, tragedy strikes, the name of the brother, because there was going to be another child, is threatened, and the two brothers walk backwards to save the name of their father. Perpetuate the father that you shouldn't be embarrassed by what's happened.
How did what the brothers did save what happened?
Because of the disgrace, okay? The disgrace, there couldn't be because he's done it, unfortunately, as they explained. He'd done a maisa to him. You couldn't fix that up. But the disgrace that his father was, the humiliation, the disgrace, that was sort of covered to him to kind of save his name in that respect.
His dignity.
Yeah. So now, that 10 generations later, to Noah, that was now the children to the father. So first it was children, it was parents to the child, to have a child. 10 generations later, it was the children to the father. There's two things going on. It's natural, hopefully, depending on the house, that the parent's relationship to the child and the child to the parents, that's natural. What's not natural, as I'll talk to myself, as we all know, we have different squabbles that go on now and then. It never goes on in our house. But between children to children, that's where it gets exciting. Never had there been that a brother stepping up for another brother until Avraham Avinu. That was on a new level. Because that's much harder. And that's what Avraham brought to the table. Where he stepped in to fulfill, okay, his brother's, okay, perpetuation. Okay, that's all nice. Very, very nice. 10 generations from Adam, where it started, to Noah. 10 generations to Avram. So if it all fits in, it'll be lovely. Let's hope it does. Let's go 10 generations forward now. And that's going to take us to Boaz. To Boaz and the story of Ruth. But just before we do that, I was thinking of what 2 modern-day stories, okay, could I share just to give a bit of a glimpse to put things, if we can judge, if we can say such a thing, we're not supposed to, but the Mefarshim explain to understand the actions of Elimelech in particular, and Naomi, Elimelech. So I was thinking, how do I give over? So when I was thinking of what stories, there were 2 striking stories that felt connected. One of them is, 2 perhaps not stories that you'd expect, but I'll share them anyway. One of them was, I think in 2012, there was an Italian cruise liner. And some of you may be familiar, don't know if the Hamadir covered this story,